It's Tuesday, December 29th, 2015, and here are the stories we're covering this week. Elon Musk says he now knows when the safe, fully autonomous self-driving car will arrive. An analysis of North Korea's computer system has revealed an underlying spy architecture to both monitor and manipulate files. A Ukrainian startup says that they've solved long-range wireless charging with their new technology, which is loosely based on how the old crystal radio works. A mysterious collector has opened the world's largest private Apple exhibition in Prague. U.S. prisoners have been getting out of jail early thanks to a software bug that's been in place for 13 years. And a botnet attack powered by a vulnerability in Athira modems is hitting WordPress websites. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
You've got mad skills. Now hone them. Learn new skills or improve your existing ones with online video tutorials and training from lynda.com through our special link at cat5.tv/lynda. Learn software, technology, creative, and business skills you can use today to help you achieve your professional goals. Join today and start learning. We'll give you this chance to try it absolutely free with unlimited access to all of the courses. Sign up now for free, cat5.tv/lynda.
I'm Sasha Dermatis, and here are the top stories from the category5.tv newsroom. A variety of automakers have begun selling semi-autonomous vehicles, but you'll have to wait probably 5 years to buy a fully autonomous one, the kind that you can that can drive you anywhere while you read a book behind the wheel. At least that's what many car companies are predicting. Tesla Motors CEO Elon Musk, on the other hand, believes his company's fully autonomous cars will arrive in just a few years. Regulations allowing them on the road could take between 1 to 5 years, depending on jurisdictions, he predicts. That's yet another notch down in Musk's ever-shortening timeline. In September, he told Danish news site Borsen that he expects the company to have self-driving vehicles ready in 3 years. And 1 year before that, the company released a statement projecting that the technology would be completed in 5 or 6 years. This is awesome for him. Musk might not be incorrect. In October, his company became the first automaker to sell semi-autonomous vehicles commercially. But his competitors are being more conservative in their predictions. Ford CEO Mark Fields told Forbes in June that he expects someone to make fully autonomous cars ready for consumer purchase within the next 5 years, but declined to say that Ford would hit that deadline. Japan's Nissan has pegged 2020 as the year it hopes to release the self-driving cars to the masses, as has Toyota. Audi has estimated it would be ready to churn out fully autonomous vehicles by 2025. Google has been testing semi-autonomous and fully autonomous vehicles for years, and it hopes to begin selling fully autonomous vehicles in 2 to 5 years, perhaps in partnership with Ford. It's possible that the exact dates are irrelevant. Car companies must do more than simply build the technology behind the fully autonomous driving. They also need to work with governments to set regulations and figure out how to get the vehicles into consumers' garages. Even if Tesla releases the perfect self-driving car before its competitors do, that doesn't mean the vehicles will outsell others. The self-driving car might be closer than it appears, but its popularization remains distant. And I agree. I don't know that I would be comfortable. Would you, Robbie?
That's kind of my question for you is, like, would you ride in an autonomous car? Fully autonomous.
I would be freaking out a little bit. I wouldn't want it to drive itself in the winter.
Does your mom, like, grab at the steering wheel while you're driving?
Not anymore.
No? She's gotten past that?
Yes.
I would not want to drive in my own owned autonomous car. I wouldn't want to own a piece of technology that's that expensive and also that potentially dangerous. However, I would like somebody else to own it, and I'd love to ride around in it. You know, I wouldn't want to, how much does a car cost? Like, how much would one of those?
$1 billion.
Like $120,000 probably.
I don't know how much they're going to cost, but I don't know that the timing is relevant, as you say, but it seems this is the progression of things. Johnny Cab is coming.
My other concern.
Yeah.
There was an episode of Doctor Who on a while ago.
You're about to say Weeping Angels.
No, I'm not. There was an episode with David Tennant where basically these cars were trying to take over the world by driving people into lakes.
Okay.
That's one of the things that I'm scared about, is they're just going to drive right off the road into a lake or something.
I'm not so afraid of an autonomous car. I'm afraid of my autonomous car trying to murder me.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I could see them being more... I mean, if Isaac Asimov's rules apply to the autonomous car, then would it be safer than... human-driven vehicle.
Yes, I trust an autonomous car more than I trust the majority of drivers out there. Like, there are some good drivers. There are so many bad drivers.
Couple things. I mean, I'm driving down the highway Christmas night, and there are people driving without their headlights on, and it's pitch black out.
Right.
And things like that. Like, driver error that is stupid.
Right.
And so, accidental, I'm sure...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I wouldn't want to own a car that's safer than all the rest of the cars and then have somebody else hit it, right?
But would it have better defensive driving capabilities because it's smart, so to speak, and it can see everything at all times? I can't see necessarily in my blind spots if somebody's doing something crazy or swerving or something, but an autonomous car can.
But then what can it do? I mean, you're in the confines of your own lane. I'm thinking the
program
would be... That's where
flight comes in. Isn't that next?
Robots are going to take over the world. I know it.
Just drive into the lake, Sasha.
So in like my perfect world, there'll be a new taxi service of autonomous cars, and I won't have to buy the car, but I'll be able to benefit from the technology.
We know it's coming. Called Johnny Cab.
Uber with self-driving cars.
That is an interesting thing. And what are Elon Musk's opinions of Uber?
What does he like it? Does he like?
Oh. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay.
Elon Musk, what are your opinions on Uber?
Well, I think we know.
Tell us.
I think we know.
The first in-depth analysis of North Korea's internal computer operating system has revealed spying tools capable of tracking documents offline. Red Star OS was designed to superficially mimic Apple's OS X, but hidden features allow it to watermark files and tie them to an individual. The covert tools were discovered by two German researchers who conducted the analysis over the past month. They presented their findings at the Chaos Communications Congress on Sunday. The researchers pored over the code of Red Star OS version 3.0, which first surfaced online about a year ago. The system's coders did a pretty good job of mimicking the basic design and functionality of Apple computers, but with a twist. Any files uploaded to the system via a USB stick or other storage device can be watermarked, allowing the state to trace the journey of that file from machine to machine. Red Star can also identify undesirable files and delete them without permission. Red Star was built using Linux, a free and open source platform which can be modified at will and was designed that way to make it as accessible as possible. There is an inherent irony in North Korea's use of the system, says one of its researchers. They are using a system that was built to promote free speech, and they are abusing it by watermarking free speech. So kind of sad Linux news, I would say.
That's a hard thing. I mean, I know it's North Korea, and so, you know, there's fears there about some things and spying on users and things like that. But it would seem kind of normal to me that a government would have access to that kind of data internally.
Right.
A company would have endpoint protection of some sort to be able to make sure that there are not data leaks taking place. And that's one of the things that are... it's a problem. There was a hard drive full of social insurance numbers and all this stuff at a Canadian government office just sitting there, an external hard drive.
So if we had all of our actual, like, secure information watermarked, then the government would be able to trace who stole it if it got stolen?
Or prevent it from being stolen by knowing where it is at any given time and prevent it from... So, for example, using endpoint protection software or a hardware appliance on a network, if Kelsey went rogue, which is destined to happen, and started going into my customer database and emailing credit card information to herself at home so that she could then take over their accounts or something or whatever it may be, data leakage happens, data theft happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And using the example of the government office where this physical hard drive was actually physically taken, and now all that information about people's, I think it was school loans, was revealed to the public. So being able to think of watermarking as being able to track individual files and find out where they've gone and
where they started even.
So regardless of who's responsible, be it North Korea or a government office in Canada, it's a tough call because security measures have to be put in place. I guess it depends on the motivation.
You know what I would say? I bet you it was the fact that nobody knew that the information was watermarked. But if you said, like if the government said all of the information on our servers will be watermarked, we will be able to trace anything, always.
And this is an operating system.
Right.
Red Star OS being distributed to citizens of North Korea and saying, here, this is the operating system of choice. And this is free and so on, right?
Not of choice. So, I'm pretty sure they don't get a choice.
Well, we're not getting all political on us. Let's just throw a little comparison out there. How many of us have seen the little pop-up that says Windows 10 is available for your system absolutely free?
Mm-hmm.
And if you read on in the terms of use, what does it say about the ability for them to be able to transfer your files, your data? How is it any not to make a comparison to North Korea between Microsoft? Okay. But perhaps media kind of skews things in such a way that we start to finger point and say, hey, they're doing something bad. Well, really, it's happening under our own noses as well.
I'm picking up what you're laying down or reading your mail, if you will.
Hey.
All right. Wireless chargers using standards like Qi, which is spelt Q-I, which is a Chinese word for natural energy, have been on the market for a while. IKEA even includes them in some of its furniture these days. So these are the furniture pieces that you just put your phone on top
of the
dresser.
I've seen the commercials,
yeah. But if you think about it, there's not that much difference between a wired and wireless charging of this kind. After all, the charger still needs to be plugged into a wall socket, and you still need to leave your phone in a designated place to charge. What would be a significant improvement, however, is charging a smartphone just by hanging around in the same room as a wireless charger. So Zee, a Ukrainian startup working in a semi-stealth mode since 2014, claims to have found a safe and reliable way to transfer electricity to a device up to 5 meters or 16 feet away.
Oh.
Awesome. The commercial version of the technology will consist of a base charging station of about 15 by 15 by 40 centimeters and a 3 millimeter thick smartphone case. The current version isn't as compact as it will become. The antenna and a buffer battery sit in a 3D printed cradle while the transmitter is contained in a large black box. It can take up to 20 seconds for the charging to start after the transmitter is powered on. That's the time needed for the buffer battery to build up ahead of steam. The project began as a curious thought in the brain of startup's founder, Ivan Chuba. Could a smartphone be powered like an old crystal radio? The idea of a crystal radio was simple. With just a coil of copper wire, antenna, capacitor, and crystal detector, and high impedance earphones, and no additional power, you can listen to some radio stations, although the sound level is very weak. What Z claims to have done is build an efficient combination of a transmitter and receiver so that the power passed along could be used to charge the buffer battery. Z's team of 8 people based in Ukraine, Poland, and the UK have spent more than a year looking for the most efficient configuration for such a system. The main breakthrough we've achieved is the antenna, Chuba said. On our working frequency, which is in the SW band, you'll normally need a large antenna to receive the signal and pass it to the converter. We've built an antenna capable of doing this that can be housed in an iPhone 6 or 6S case. The team is currently working on a new prototype so that it can take to the SVOD Europe conference in Dublin in January. From there, the prototype will be sent to a certification center in the UK in order to receive the necessary documents to start mass production. That's
wow.
Close. That's soon.
Already there.
Initially, Z will offer cases for iPhone 6 and 6S, but in the future, the startup plans to widen the range. The idea is to license the technology to establish case vendors. This is great. This is the sort of news story where I can picture you could go onto a plane and by the time you land, everybody's phone would be charged. Right?
Sure. I love that. I love that they're licensing the technology rather than trying to be the end all be all by our case. So
right.
If they say, okay, Samsung, if you would like to implement this technology and, hey, let's also implement transmitters at every railway station and bus stop and everywhere
right.
else.
But on buses even.
Yeah.
So I was thinking earlier when I was reading the stories that if they had the ability to modify pacemakers and, you know, little things that need constant, like ear, what are they called? Hearing aids.
Hearing aids, yeah.
Right? So that you just automatically kind of get juiced up anywhere you go.
My immediate thought is, okay, for a medical device like a pacemaker or something that, you know, my life is relying on this,
mm-hmm.
I would be afraid to implement that. But if it was a secondary measure or just a charging mechanism, so if
right.
I had, you know, a full day's worth of battery in my pacemaker and was able to charge it wirelessly by entering
right.
my house...
Right, sort
going
of like a
sleep.
Like a backup, right? You think about people,
sure.
I mean...
So it's not actually powering the device, but it's
right.
charging
oh, yeah.
it.
Right. So, I mean, there are tons of people out there who are hard of hearing that can't afford the batteries necessary for their hearing aids.
Batteries are
you
tiny.
You go through them, yeah.
Yeah.
Expensive.
So if they had something like that, I mean, if you went to a public library and all of a sudden, you know, you could hear again. I like it.
There are a lot of implementations. I mean, we're looking at phones and but yeah, thinking about other devices
yeah.
and all the uses of it.
Or your teeny drone would never die.
I like the way you think.
So great. You know how horrible it is, that like tiny little window where you have to plug it in and not fly it while it charges up again?
What is it? It's 5 meters. So that's, I can go way further than 5 meters. It's got like 80 feet distance, but
you can practice
fly
your
tricks. By every now and then.
Yeah.
And it charge it as you go. Hey.
So great.
I wonder how long it would take to charge something, like to full capacity.
Yeah.
Like
and considering a shortwave band, it's going to be a low power, you know,
yeah.
little trickle charging. So it's almost
take a few hours.
But if you're constantly within this field,
yeah.
which we assume is going to be safe because that's the whole idea. They're getting it certified to prove that it's safe and
yeah.
get it registered.
Which I like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people will
oh,
like.
Great new technology, but
is it, safe?
It kills
and
you.
And yes.
Yeah.
Not the cars. The cars won't kill you. Okay. Although the official Apple Store is yet to come to the capital of the Czech Republic, the city has recently seen the launch of the Apple Museum, which claims to host the largest private exhibition of its kind. Housed in 3 buildings in Prague's Old Town, the museum has an extensive list of 472 exhibits on display, from nearly every Apple product ever built to Steve Jobs' business cards from his times at Next and Pixar. Entry to the museum costs €11, or £8, with all proceeds donated to charity purposes. In addition to the actual exhibition, a raw vegan restaurant called Steven's Food will soon open up, serving foods that were probably enjoyed by the Apple co-founder. Like apples that are both raw and vegan. The museum's website calls Prague the first city where you can see this unique exhibition, which could mean that the collection might be on the move at some point. Apple doesn't have an official museum of its own products, although there used to be one that Steve Jobs closed soon after his return to the company in 1997. So there you go. An Apple museum. Not for apples of the tree variety, but for Steve Jobs apples. Apple. Very cool.
I want to go.
You want to go?
I want to go.
You going to make the trek?
I don't like Apple very much, but I want to go.
It is kind of neat from a nostalgia standpoint.
Yeah.
And to see that it came from here to here.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
I want to go.
I would go. I'd go if I was in the neighborhood.
Let's all go. Let's make it a Category 5 class outing. There you go.
Nice. All right. More than 3,200 U.S. prisoners have been released early because of a software glitch.
Whoops.
Yep, oopsie. The bug miscalculated the sentence reduction prisoners in Washington State had received for good behavior. It was introduced in 2002 as part of an update that followed a court ruling on applying good behavior credits. Washington's Governor Jay Inslee said at a press conference that this problem was allowed to continue for 13 years is deeply disappointing to me, totally unacceptable, and frankly maddening. State officials said that many released prisoners would have to return to jail to finish their sentences. On average, prisoners got out 49 days early, but one prisoner had his sentence cut by 600 days. Good for him. The bug was detected.
I'm free!
Well, it was good behavior anyhow. These are criminals, but the bug was detected but not fixed in 2012. An update that applies the correct formula for calculating sentence cuts is due to be in place by January the 7th. Until then, the District of Columbia has been ordered not to release any prisoners without checking manually that they should be released. I have a little bit of a problem with people having to go back to prison to complete their sentences.
Yeah, does this hurt?
If it's for 47 to 600 days.
Oh, man. Can you imagine it? Like, if this was really somebody who was on good behavior, like somebody who, like, I've changed and I've, you know, whatever it may be, and go home to their kids or something, and the joy and the... And then being pulled back again because of an error.
Right. There's a couple of things. There's not very much space in the prison system in Washington, I assume.
Most states.
And secondly, there's going to be so many people fighting this that it's just going to be a legal nightmare to try and get them to go back to jail for a problem that's not their
fault.
Doing. Yeah, they didn't create this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll defend you. I'm no lawyer, but I'll defend you. I'll get you off.
I just hope that the guy that was out 600 days early is a nice person.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. But, I mean, they say, I mean, once you serve your time, that's it, right? You are reintroduced into the community after paying your penance.
Right.
You shouldn't have to go back.
You shouldn't have to go back unless you do something bad behavior-wise.
That's a tough call. That's a real tough call.
Like erasing the stop signs out of pictures or something.
It's only illegal if you do it to get out of tickets.
That's true.
That's what we learned tonight.
A botnet has been identified that is targeting WordPress websites with a password guessing attack. In February of this year, a security researcher at VoidSec noticed a brute force attack on his personal WordPress site, and he noticed a pattern in the IP addresses attacking his site. They were mostly Italian internet service providers. What he discovered is that the IPs attacking his site were all devices. They were all Athera modem routers, to be exact. By doing some further sleuthing, he discovered that all the Athera devices involved in the attack were using default login credentials. The modems had obviously been hacked, and the attacker had gained access through the default login. They had then installed malware on the modems that launched a brute force password guessing attack on WordPress sites. The Athera devices in question suffer from various cross-site scripting vulnerabilities, among other issues. To protect your WordPress site, make sure you have a security tool such as WordFence monitoring and protecting your login system. If you use a modem which might be suspect, make sure your firmware is patched to the latest version and that you have configured strong login credentials on the modem. I know, Robbie, that we've done a show on WordFence and so I know that you can go back. I don't remember what episode it is, but make sure if you're using WordPress to...
It's kind of a twofold warning, isn't it? Because you get a modem from your internet service provider and you just think, oh, it's safe. They say, you know, plug it in, turn it on. Oh, look, I've got internet, so that's great. Who would want to compromise me? Well, you're just a number. It's like it's like the olden days before, you know, before we had the ability to go style and stuff, picking up a phone and starting at, you know, 1234, 1235, 1236, 1236, to do solicitations and stuff. Or, you know, people running for office would have people sitting in a call center dialing like that. Well, similarly, your IP address is just a sequence of numbers that it counts through. And, oh, it found a router that's susceptible, so let's compromise
that. This isn't even just a person plugging things in. This is a person who made a program that plugs it in. Like, he probably, he or she.
Probably. We're guessing it's a he because we're gender stereotyping hackers.
Sorry, he or she wrote a program and is probably, you know, sleeping peacefully at night while all of this mayhem is occurring. So,
and then what does a botnet mean? All of these modems, so let's say 10,000 modems all together working to attack.
Right.
So your modem at home being used as part of a supercomputer, basically, to attack websites. And those websites are, again, anonymous, just websites that happen to be indexed by the search engine. And so they're able to find out that, hey, this site runs WordPress, and now let's attack it.
Mm-hmm.
So your WordPress site all of a sudden becomes vulnerable.
So, yeah, crazy. Anyhow, big thanks this week to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us. If you found a new story you'd like to send, email it to newsroom@category5.tv. For all your tech news with a slight Linux bias, visit the Category5.tv newsroom at newsroom.category5.tv. For the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Dermatis.